Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you why Tom Brady will definitely be done with football after this season.
And I'm Colin Cowherd, and I'll tell you why it's up to Kyrie Irving to fix the Cavs' latest mess.
Yeah.
Speak for yourself starts right now.
The young guy.
Tired of LeBron having to save the world.
Yeah, the kid needs to do it. All right, hello and welcome. We're joined today by Super Bowl champ Seth Joyner and the co-host of The Herd, Christine Leahy. Let's start in Dallas, where the Cowboys were left scrambling to explain their decision to release Lucky Whitehead yesterday after it was revealed that the receiver was not, in fact, arrested for shoplifting back in June. Jason Garrett and Whitehead both addressed how the Cowboys handled the situation.
Yesterday, we made a decision that we deemed to be in the best interest of the Dallas Cowboys. We're standing by that decision. We're going to move on.
But that decision was based on the idea that he'd been arrested last month, correct?
Yesterday, we made a decision that we thought was in the best interest of the Dallas Cowboys. And we're going to stand by that decision. We're going to move on.
Not fair to him to just keep saying that over and over?
It's the truth. We made a decision that we thought was in the best interest of the Dallas Cowboys.
As far as the stuff that's preached, they didn't. I mean, I left out the draft. You see the mantra that's all around the wall, all around the state, all around the stars. By 12:45, I figured out that this is even going on. By 2:30, I was released. Like, what's the real reason? I'm telling y'all I didn't do this. Like, let me clear my name. I didn't even get time to do that.
All right, Lucky got lucky, and he got picked up by the Jets today. But, Colin, do you feel the Cowboys handled this inappropriately?
It wasn't perfect, but I really believe breaking up's hard to do. I've said this for years. We get into wars, we can never get out of them. Everybody's got a pickup line. Nobody can break up correctly. You do it on Facebook. My wife worked in HR. You let go of people, now you add social media and that transparency. It wasn't perfect. I didn't love it. But listen, the guy was a marginal player who, according to the people that I know that cover the Cowboys, was going to get released anyway. He'll last for the Jets maybe a year or two. So it's not the end of the world. I don't think it was perfect. I'm not bothered by it.
Listen, I came into the show earlier thinking I wasn't bothered by it. When I think just a little bit deeper, though, where Lucky Whitehead has a legitimate complaint, when he gets cut that way, that's an accusation of guilt that he did what he was accused of when they release him like that. He didn't do what they did. He didn't do what they said he did. So I think it was a little bit unfair to Lucky. I don't have a problem with him getting cut. He wasn't that good. He was a bit of a headache. But when you release him under that kind of scrutiny...
In conjunction with that story.
That's exactly right. And maybe he was going to get cut anyways for various different reasons he had on the team. But the fact is they didn't cut him for any of those things. They cut him for this, which is not right, especially when you look at all the other times they could have cut players for doing certain things or being arrested, and they didn't. So to cut Lucky like this is exactly what you said. It's kind of putting a mark on his name that shows, okay, well, we didn't like him for this reason, or we didn't believe him, and it sends the message to the rest of the league that will maybe hurt his chances of playing for another team. Thankfully, he did get picked up by the Jets, so we'll see how that goes. But it's really hard to outlive an accusation, especially when it comes from an organization as powerful as the Cowboys.
If he was a headache, what was Greg Hardy?
Yeah.
What was Randy Gregory?
Two guys that can get to the quarterback.
But still, that's the most important thing. I understand that, but you call him a headache. But there have been so many guys on this roster that have done so many things that have been much more egregious than what he's been claimed to have done. Okay, he's late to a meeting, so they don't let him travel to a game. My goodness, I've been late to a meeting. I missed a whole meeting.
You were
and
a
haven't been able,
player.
I understand that, but you can't listen. You're going to sit there and you're going to vehemently defend Zeke Elliott, okay? But then you're going to turn around and cut this kid without having all the facts? This looks bad for Jerry. It looks bad for the Cowboys. And I'm tired of Jason Garrett standing up there looking like some kind of cyborg, like he's only programmed to say certain things.
He went kind of Bill Belichick on us.
But, you know, Christine said something that because it's such a powerful entity, it can stick with you. I agree with that. But also because it's such a powerful entity, it's a national story, and I think he's become a little bit of a sympathetic figure where everybody's like, man, the Cowboys hosed this kid. If he gets cut by Jacksonville with this arrest, we may not see him. We may
Jets.
Not. or the Jets. Yeah. We may not hear about this. We just hear arrest. We don't. But because the Cowboys are so big that we've heard the whole story. I've never talked about Lucky Whitehead for a minute.
I had no idea he was on the team until this controversy. But I'm not going to spin this into somehow this is a positive for him. His name has been associated with shoplifting or whatever it was he was accused of. And now it's come out that, hey, he was a problem child. So his reputation has been damaged. And again, I think yesterday I felt one way, and even coming into this show, but just the more that I think about it, he's accused of something, the Cowboys cut him, and listen, he has said that Jason Garrett told him straight to his face, I don't believe you.
The Cowboys had to spin it this way, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had to spin it because they unrightly released this kid without getting all the information. Jason Garrett looked him in the eye, like you said, and basically told him, you're a liar. Okay, and when the information came out and it was wrong, what other way could they spin it? They had to just throw all the other stuff that he's ever done since he's been with the organization out there to make him look like he was a bad apple that they had to throw away.
And what they should have done is, and I know he probably wouldn't want to go back to the organization because of what they did, but they should have said, hey, we made a mistake and we'll have you back.
That, even if they didn't say, hey, we'll have you back, they could come out today and say, hey, we made a mistake.
By the way, Jerry Jones was defensive. Like, Jerry doesn't get, he's pretty playful with the press. Jerry today was defensive. He knows he butchered it. Yeah. Like, he's very aware how this is playing.
I'm going to give one other little excuse for the Cowboys. They take so much heat for defending their players that they overreacted here trying to be tough on a guy, and it blew up in their face.
Hey, it's Jason McIntyre, and before we move into the next topic, I want to take some time to tell you about ZipRecruiter. I started TheBigLead.com, and I know firsthand how much of a challenge it is to put the right team together. You got to hire the right people. You cannot find the best candidates by posting your job just to one website. You need to post it to all the sites. At ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to over 100 job sites with just one click. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in less than 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes nationwide. And right now, our listeners can start forming their own winning team on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/speak. That's ZipRecruiter.com/speak. Try it for free today at ZipRecruiter.com/speak. And you can start building your perfect team right away. Now let's get back to the show.
All right, Jason Garrett wasn't the only one who had to deal with a fallout over Lucky Whitehead. Jerry Jones was asked if he regretted cutting the receiver, and the Cowboys owner went off.
I've never talked to a player that I didn't have empathy. Now, you're talking to somebody here that if y'all have done one thing in my time, and to criticize me is how I will back up a player to a fault. You've done it. You've done it for years for that. I will back them up to a fault so that when we do make a decision around here that in best interest of the team to move on, there's one thing you can forget about, and that is whether you're being fair or whether you've given it consideration of what it means to the individual. That doesn't happen around here. Thank you, guys.
All right, despite trying to make an example of Lucky, Jerry usually sides with problem players, including Ezekiel Elliott, who's currently under investigation for domestic violence. Jason, is Jerry enabling bad behavior with his star-friendly approach?
No, listen, I think bad behavior starts in the home long ago, and by the time you get to the NFL, you're a pretty much finished product. What I want to be crystal clear here, because Jerry and the Cowboys deservedly going to take some heat for the Lucky situation, but I agree with Jerry. Their history is backing up all kinds of players, and in this situation here, they went with what was politically expedient and was going to look like great optics. We finally got tough with someone, and it blew up in their face. And so the message Jerry hears is, I'm going to defend them all to the hilt moving forward. I'll never play politics again.
Well, you know, we can say the Cowboys, I mean, this Cowboys situation, because they're Dallas and they're profound, we talk about it. Like, this is the reality. Jerry's not alone here. Basketball, football, high school coach, AAU coach, college coach, NFL coach, like you said. Generally speaking, this is the way the ecosystem of sports works. You're really talented. From 15 on, you're going to be grooved in regardless of baggage. Jerry's the highest profile American pro coach who has the sort of AAU high school college mantra, which is groove them through. Most pro owners stay out of this stuff. The coach, you know, takes front and center. But Jerry's doing what, this is what American sports is.
But that's what he wanted to do. That's why he ran Jimmy out of there. Because he wanted to be front and center. He wanted to be the guy that's doing all the interviews. That's why he ran him out. That's why Jason Garrett regurgitates what Jerry Jones says and then walks off. He's got it exactly the way he wanted. And you know what? He has been an enabler. All you got to do is look back to the better teams, okay? It's one thing that you know that the upper echelon players, you know, your quarterback or your top, your big three, Troy, Emmett, and Michael, you knew that those guys, they were judged and dealt with by a different standard. You even talked about it. If you got guys that can get to the quarterback, if you got higher players, of course they're going to be judged differently, okay? But he's done this forever. He's done this with that team. He's doing it with this team. And he can talk about how, well, you know what, you know, we've given guys chances. By the time we make that move, listen, Jerry was really heated right there. And the guilt looked like it was just eating at him, something fierce. And he had to just get it off his chest that this is how we do with everybody. Everybody knows that every player on the 53-man roster is not judged and not handled in the same way.
It's a terrible message for everyone to see. And what he was saying and getting so defensive is, I'll defend all my players to a fault. No, you're saying that you'll defend your top-tier players to a fault.
Exactly.
Regardless of what they do. And as a woman, I think this is one of the most dangerous things that can possibly happen. And again, I'll go back to the Cowboys being such a powerful organization that the rest of the world looks to, sports fans or not. And one of the biggest reasons that women are afraid of coming forward when domestic violence happens or something like that is because these stars are continually defended by these big organizations. So when Jerry Jones blindly backs up Ezekiel Elliott and Greg Hardy for what they've been accused of, just stay out of it. Because if you back them up until they get their day in court, you're telling that woman who was assaulted or whatever happened to her that it doesn't matter and that she shouldn't come forward because this is what's going to happen to the guy who hurt you. And that's a very dangerous thing. And just look, here's a list of all the players on the Cowboys right now that are facing potential suspensions this year, those are far worse crimes than petty theft. And there's evidence that shows that they should have been arrested or they should go to court for these types of things. Lucky didn't, it wasn't even him.
Lucky was the sacrificial lamb.
Right. And it is showing that, hey, as long as you're a great player, we don't care what you do. But if you're a marginal player and you do something bad, you're gone. And that's a very dangerous thing to spread to the rest of the sports community.
I think it's just endemic in our society.
It is.
I think if you're a top politician and the party sees you as a potential senator, governor, they'll look the other way. I think, you know, I was just thinking about, because this is such a male story, I was thinking about, as you were talking, I was thinking about what's an industry women dominate? And I was thinking of, like, supermodels. And I've read stories, you know, not like I know much about supermodels, mm-hmm. but you hear stories about, like, the supermodels and their bad behavior, and people look the other way. And so in male-dominated industries, often pro-American sports, but in other industries, in tech, you hear stories about the late Steve Jobs and how he treated people. I don't know if this is a European thing or an Asian thing. It's a very American thing. But talent equals more tolerance.
There's a difference between tolerance for being a diva or being annoying to work with,
right,
and domestic violence.
Right.
Because that means that the victims don't want to come forward. And I just think that Jerry Jones, he has a daughter. She's high up in the organization. How does she feel about this? How does his wife feel about this?
Well, Christine, I think you made great points. I think Collins made a good point as well in terms, look at the tech industry and the way it's been written about and the things that are going on in the tech industry in terms of sexual harassment and other issues. It is endemic and a part of our society. I don't like when it always gets reduced down to just football because it is a part of our society. Look, we're a sexist society. Mm-hmm. Men have dominated globally and have abused our domination of women in ways that show up in every walk of life, in sports, in the real world, and every place else.
All right, welcome back. Seth Joyner, Christine Leahy are back. Let's move to New England, where the Patriots kick off training camp today, just 8 days before Tom Brady's 40th birthday. A lot of speculation about Tom's future, especially since his wife, Gisele Bündchen, told a reporter Brady suffered a concussion last season. When asked what he would say if Gisele ever told him to retire, Brady said, quote, "If your wife is anything like my wife," of course she is, Tom, which I'm sure she is, "then they have their own ideas of what they want for the family. The women in our lives, thankfully, are very protective in nature, but she wants me to live my dreams, and I want her to live hers. We're all figuring out how to balance those things in our life." Whitlock, do you think Gisele will convince Tom to retire after this season?
After that quote, are we not all in agreement she wants him to retire? Or can we at least agree on that?
Yes.
No.
After that quote?
Nope.
He basically stated she wants him to retire.
No.
And so I'm just telling, my money is on Gisele. What Gisele wants, she's going to get.
He says she's protected.
Why are you making this a Gisele versus Tom thing, though? If you read the
marriage, but
we're going to go there again. If you read that quote, which is a beautiful quote, where he's saying, you know, she wants what she wants, I want what I want, but we both want to honor each other's dreams and goals, and we talk about that, and we're trying to find a balance. It's a partnership. It's not one versus the other. It's them saying, hey, this is what I think. I don't think it's great for you to be playing football, but
I
want to. So what works together?
You ever heard of Kobe Shaq?
Well, have you ever heard that saying, happy wife equals happy life? Never forget this saying, happy Brady equals happy lady.
Oh, wow.
Okay, Tom was an accomplished football player before Gisele. This is not parents or a mother saying, our son's not playing, our son. This was Tom's career before Gisele. Mm-hmm. I think that's different. I think Tom, eventually, it's his call, and I think he will play.
Hold on, Seth. I just want to...
And she'll support him.
Gisele's the first woman that said, I do, and then expected a guy to change after that. She's the first to do that. Okay.
I'll tell you what, if she's smart, she learned from all the other ones that tried to do that and lost out. But listen, at the end of the day, she is not going to be happy if he's not happy. And if she forces his hand...
If she
forces his hand and makes him quit, and he's got to sit around with a long face and not being happy...
And watch Garoppolo win the Super Bowl.
It does not bode well. Listen, Tom Brady is the best quarterback right now that he's ever been. You know? He understands the game. He sees the game in ways that no other quarterback sees it. You know, he's unstoppable from a mental standpoint. Okay?
Let me tell you what Gisele standard is. She ain't sitting around looking at his QB rating. Is he the best husband and father right now that he's ever been?
You guys are thinking, you keep saying happy wife, happy life, to think that a woman doesn't also want her husband to be happy. That makes a woman extremely happy.
I'm not married yet.
No, but to know, you're not married either, so you can't say anything.
That's because I'm smart.
But listen, you know what makes a woman really happy, though, is seeing that her partner is happy.
Getting her way.
It's the maternal, nurturing nature that's part of a lot of women.
Getting her way.
And listen, do I think she wants him to play football? Probably not. Because
it's not. She doesn't.
Yeah, because she wants him to stay healthy for their future together. But she also sees that this is his dream, and she wants him to live that out. So they'll have to compromise and...
She's looking out for his best interest.
Yes.
In her mind, his best interest would be to retire.
Right.
Okay? But at the end of the day, it's all about... Tom has sat down with her and said, okay, listen, I guarantee to have this conversation. When it's over, it's over. Football's not like any other job where you can work it...
That's true.
50 years till you're 50, 60 years old. When it's over, it's over. And there is no going back. Okay, so he has not only the skill set, the mindset, and the perfect situation with Belichick and this football team to remain dominant. The only way that Tom Brady is going to get hurt, the only way that Tom Brady is not going to be who he is, okay, is if that offensive line falls apart and they fail to protect him. Okay,
Seth, that's the only way. Where are you from? You ever shoot dice in the
streets? Come on, man, I'm from New York.
Okay, you shot dice in the street. There's a saying. Big bank take little bank. Giselle got big bank, more than Tom Brady. That's the factor you guys are not thinking about. The dynamics in this relationship, she's already, again, I've said it, people think I'm joking. She's got all the Giselle, and she's got more money than him. She will that win this matter. War. Yes, you
know
it
what,
does.
You know what, Christine? There's a reason why he ain't been married.
Big bank take little bank.
There's a reason
I
why.
I keep it real.
Because it's that mindset. It's that mindset that keeps you single because you can't look beyond.
That woman would
you
make
can't
more
look
money.
Beyond just yourself. Yeah. When you're in a relationship or when you're married, it's all about me making you happy and you
Don't
making me happy.
Check the divorce rate stats. Everybody goes in, I'm in it for this, I'm in it for that. Then they have a kid or two. It's like, you ain't that important.
No.
These two kids are more important. And my happiness, time I put up with you playing football. How many Super Bowls you got to win? I want you home. She's got more money than him. She looks better than him.
About the money.
She got more better options than him.
He looks good, too. But answer this for me. I think it's tough for a lot of football players to retire because they can't find an identity again. Like, that was everything. That was who they were. But for Tom, I wonder, and I don't know, you could speak better to this than I can, he does have things going on outside of football, so maybe it wouldn't be as harsh of a blow.
Mr.
And because
Bungie.
He's had such a successful career.
The hardest thing for football players is when you go into the NFL without any kind of self-identity, okay? I've never been disillusioned as an eighth-round draft pick. I was Seth Joyner before the Eagles picked me with the 208th pick, and when I decided I wasn't going to play again, I was still going to be Seth Joyner. So my security wasn't wrapped up in what I did or who someone perceived me to be. I already had an identity, but there's a lot of guys that they are identified and they are insecure human beings, superstars that I can tell you that you are very familiar with that have no self-security because their self-security is wrapped up in what they did. Okay? Now, Tom Brady doesn't seem like that type of guy.
All right, welcome back. Seth Joyner is back with us, and we're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Greg Jennings. Let's move to the issue of player safety. Boston University CTE Center just published a new study of high school, college, and professional football players, revealing that 87% of the brains they studied had CTE. Not only that, of 111 NFL players' brains that were donated to the study, 110 were diagnosed with CTE. Colin, what's your reaction to this study?
Well, first of all, there was admittedly a tremendous selection bias. The brains donated, not randomly discovered, were from people who had concerns about CTE. That's the first thing. Yeah. Secondly, what it did, it validated kind of a belief or theory that we talked about. Boy, CTE is prevalent. And what it shows you is, yes, it is an issue. But three things are happening in football, and they're all good. The market is changing. At the youth level, less hitting early. Good thing. Equipment is evolving. Good thing. And also, players are retiring a little earlier. Top players, to Brickashaw Ferguson for note. I think that's a good thing. I believe football should be played. I do not believe football should be played forever. I think it should be played at a tackling level from maybe 15 to 29. Now, there are punters, kickers, quarterbacks. You get inside the trenches. I don't think it's a game that should be played for 20 years at the highest level. So my takeaway is, while the numbers are startling, I jump in and I read it. There's a tremendous selection bias. And my takeaway is, football's safer today than it's been my entire life.
I don't want to sound like someone who thinks the earth is flat or that climate change doesn't exist, but I just think the whole CTE story is being told completely out of context. It's being told in a way to attack football. I think that brain damage in boxing, in football, in hockey, in soccer, in any of these contact sports where you use your head at all, CTE is probably there and relevant. But this hysteria, like, oh, we got to end football. Do we have to end candy? Candy does more damage to kids than football. That's just a fact. That is a fact. Candy, sugar, kills, afflicts you in ways. Again, I'm living testament to it.
Alcohol.
Thank you. But I'm just saying candy. We're not trying to outlaw candy. We're not, there's not hysteria about what candy does to kids and human beings. And again, so I'm very defensive about football. The attack on football to me is completely out of context. Again, you look at soccer, any of these other sports where you use your head, it's there. People now understand it, just like we understand the risk of candy, and we still eat it. Fast food, we still eat it. Alcohol, we still drink it. Weed, we still smoke it. But football, we got to put a stop to it. Get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are staggering. I mean, I was shocked.
It's a bias report.
It is a bias report, but still, the numbers are staggering. And regardless if these were family members who had already known that they've experienced this with their loved one or
yeah,
whomever.
Yeah, they had concerns.
They had concerns. What stood out to me was there was a 23-year-old. The youngest age on here was 23-year-old. That's not a long time to be in any field, any sport, any contact sport. I don't care what you're doing. That lets me know that this is not just an NFL thing. It's because at 23 years old, it doesn't take a whole lot of football career to acquire this and these symptoms. Another thing that for me as a player, and I heard you say this to Colin earlier today on The Herd, if I were to see these numbers as I have, and you were to ask me, Greg, would you play football? Would you do it all over again? Absolutely, I would. Because it provided not only myself, but my family with an opportunity that we never had. And so, but as a parent of four kids, one being
parent,
a son.
Wealthy parent.
Wealthy parent or not. I don't even consider that. That's neither here nor there.
But your life has changed due to some wealth.
It has changed, but I wouldn't tell my son that he can't play. But I'm not going to encourage it because of what I know, because of experience. It has nothing to do with
wealth. Candy.
I don't really care for my kids eating candy, too. I'm with you. I've seen fanned up.
It's more dangerous.
Yeah, Jason, I'm with you from the standpoint that I'm a football purist, okay? And these numbers are going to be skewed because you're talking about 110 out of 111 dead people, dead guys that played football. So the numbers are going to be skewed. At the end of the day, we've always known that the game of football is a violent game. You know, and to your point, Colin, listen, I've coached young kids. That starting kids when they're 15 years old doesn't fly because I've coached 12 and 13-year-olds who never played a down of football before, and they came out and competed against my kids that started playing when they were 6, 7, 8 years old. They couldn't even compete. They had no business on the field. You can't catch them up. There's not enough coaching that catches them up. I get it. When the NFL gets slapped with $760 million lawsuit, okay, there's going to be some blowback because now they're in a position where what else can happen, you know, to take a massive amount of money out of our pocket? So, yeah, it starts at the NFL level. It filters down to the collegiate level, into the high school, then down to the youth. You know, but it's way overblown because as long as my son wants to play and he doesn't have any concussion issues, he's going to play. Because you know what? What the game teaches him and what the game is meant to me, it speaks volumes for what it would mean for him and his life and young kids that play the game of football.
You know, Seth points on something. I remember when I was a little kid, way before the executives for the tobacco industry stood up and sort of embarrassed themselves. We all remember that picture, right? I didn't smoke. I just knew smoking wasn't good for you. There's never been a time in my life that I thought, if I play football, I'll live longer. Like, it's just known. Like, I grew up in a town where there was commercial fishing. Like, there didn't need to be a national security alert that if you went out on the rough seas in the winter, people could die.
Coal miner.
Like, we live in a country where risk is part of sports adventure, and men tend to move toward it often.
Listen,
and
so football players understand. They understand the ramifications. They understand the trade-off of what they're doing. You are risking your well-being in the moment and your future well-being for the monetary gain of today. We understand that. to say this, that's not the case isn't true.
But not just the monetary gain. Take me. Again, I didn't earn any money off football, but it did move me from poor working class to where I am now. Absolutely. So many guys have been moved from dangerous inner city communities to college campuses, had their eyes open and moved on and up. That's why I'm so defensive about football. When it comes to studies, all these you get exactly what you pay for. Whoever paid for the study wanted these results. That's how studies work. I'm gonna put out a study, pay for a study that says I'm the best looking man in America, and I guarantee you I can get 1,000 women to vote that yes, I am. You pay them enough.
Let's move to LeBron James, whose drama with Kyrie just keeps on going. LeBron took to Twitter yesterday to deny multiple reports about Kyrie's trade demand, including one from Cleveland.com, that he was eager for the Cavs to trade Kyrie after they signed Derrick Rose. All right, Whitlock, is it up to LeBron to repair his relationship with Kyrie?
Yeah, I think LeBron is the biggest star in the NBA. He's older than Kyrie. He chose to come back to Cleveland. He runs the franchise. Of course it's on LeBron James to be the bigger man here and try to make peace and work this thing out.
So it's not on Kyrie to realize that he lives a life that is the dream scenario for virtually every guy in the league. He gets his money, he gets his shoe deal, he gets his title, he's 25, he's treated like a star, he gets the biggest shot in the NBA Finals. Like, who gets that?
But that's not his dream. We can't decide what dream each person has. We don't know. Maybe Kyrie's dream is to go live in another state or just do something else. But like you said, of course it's on LeBron to mend this relationship, because if it weren't for LeBron, they wouldn't have any problems in the first place. Everything that I've seen has been that Kyrie doesn't trust LeBron anymore, that LeBron was trying to get Chris Paul there, that LeBron wasn't being a good teammate. And so, yes, it is. And he is so focused on being the leader in every way and controlling the roster and getting what he wants. You can't pick and choose when you want to be the leader. You have to do it in sickness and in health. And so right now it is on LeBron. If he wants to keep winning and keep Kyrie, who is the second best player on that team, it's on him to fix it.
Scottie Pippen knew who was the man. McHale knew who was the man. Worthy knew who was the man. Kyrie thinks he's the man.
That's not true.
I think it's beyond repair. Number one, with the Chris Paul rumor that LeBron went and tried to get Chris Paul traded. If that really happened, there is no coming back from that, number one. And if Kyrie wants to live in a different state, what is LeBron apologizing for if he wants out of Cleveland? There's no reason for him to apologize. I think their relationship, their two camps are talking back and forth now. I think that quote with Stephen A. kind of made that, perpetuated that a little bit about LeBron wanting to beat Kyrie. I played with LeBron, and I never really heard him ever say anything like that. He's a really good teammate, but he's not that type of good. I've never heard him say anything like that. So I think that was more so coming from the camps. You know, that's how the camp felt about the situation. And I think that kind of got, you know, blown out of proportion. I think Stephen A. could have, the great work he does, I think that's something that maybe he could have, or just didn't even put it out there at all, you know, just leave it alone.
LeBron's a good teammate, you hear that?
No, I did, but Colin, here's where you're wrong. Kyrie knows he's number two. That's why he wants to leave and be number one someplace else, or number 1B someplace else. Again, he knows what it is. He's not in denial that LeBron James is the best player on that team. He thinks he should have a little bit more influence, a little bit more say-so. It's all about LeBron, and he wants to go someplace where it's not that situation.
He gets more shots than LeBron.
Yeah, he does, and he has more shots since LeBron came, averaged more points since LeBron came. He's been to 3 straight finals, possibly 4. Before, they were just a losing team. Now they're a winning franchise. He can mortgage winning if he wants to be a star. Maybe he has a clause in his contract that says if he wins MVP, he gets some kind of big incentive or something, like through his shoe contract or in a contract that he signed. It doesn't, or any kind of merchandise contract.
Eddie, some guys are different, though. Tell how would Allen Iverson handle playing with LeBron James? And everybody loved Allen Iverson's competitiveness and his will and everything. I think he would love it.
This is a different. It's not like it's
in his prime.
Yeah, he's not a super. LeBron's not a superstar that needs to be scorned. He's not a selfish. He's an unselfish superstar and willing to defer. How many times does Kyrie take the game-winning shot?
Because LeBron deferred.
No, that's not the truth. If he's rocking, He's going to let him go. In game three, when they lost, Kyrie was 0-for-7 from three. LeBron had everything going. So he made Kyle Korver started knocking down some shots. So that's why he made the right play at the wrong time.
You're sticking totally to on the court. There are off-court issues, the way the organization treats LeBron and his camp.
Well, but that's an organization problem.
I get
that's
it.
That's Dan Gilbert.
But you can't. More reason why Kyrie wants to get out. He sees that the organization is in trouble, and then LeBron's potentially leaving in a year anyway. So get out while you can.
Well, where are you going to go? Now, you have zero power at this point.
Yeah, they can trade you anywhere they want.
Yeah, they could go put you anywhere they want to. You have zero power at this point. So the main thing is, I know he doesn't. If that's true about LeBron trying to get Chris Paul, he doesn't trust LeBron, and he doesn't trust Dan Gilbert. Dan Gilbert gave him the keys to the car, said, here's a new car. And a few days later, LeBron came and said, no, give me them keys. That's LeBron's car. You go sit in the back in the middle
and ride with us. Let me ask you. I know you've seen The Wire.
Yeah.
Whose side were you on, Avon or Stringer? Whose side were you on?
Man.
LeBron James is Stringer Bell. And I've always been an Avon guy.
Yeah, I'm an Avon guy.
LeBron does a little sneaky stuff, Chris Paul and all this stuff, and you just think Kyrie Irving's just supposed to put up with that and not be upset?
I don't think he's supposed to, but the grass ain't always greener on the other side.
There you go.
It's over.